Welcome to the Mosaic Church Weekly Podcast, where parking is never an issue. Here at Mosaic, we strive to follow Jesus in authentic community for the world. This week, Morris Dirks continues week two of our Advent series. Morris and the rest of our teaching team pride themselves on having the perfect faces for a podcast. If you are doubtful or would like to find out more about Mosaic, please visit our website at www.mosaicportland.org. Now here is Morris with his talk titled, Rethinking the Christmas Dream.
Well, would you take your Bibles this morning and turn to 2 Corinthians? We're in the second in our series on the Advent conspiracy, so 2 Corinthians is where we are. Second Corinthians 9:15. Gabe, why don't you throw up that verse right away? Great. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift, 2 Corinthians 9:15. We'll be focusing on that verse a little bit, but let me take us back to last week where Randy, one of our preaching pastors, together with Tim, the three of us are leading us through this series, and Randy started us off. And Randy introduced us to the empire last week, the power of the world system, the societal forces that shape our thinking and form our values. There are two societal forces that are part of this kind of worldly or dark empire that want to take away from us our humanity, our dignity, our value, the image of God that was stamped on us, that want to kind of dehumanize us. There are two societal forces that top the list that want to rip at us and pull us off center. And that would be money and sex, materialism and eroticism. If you go turn on your TV tonight and watch TV for a couple of hours, tell me that the two dominant themes that don't keep flying at you, while there will be others, but the two dominant themes that will keep coming at you during the advertising and along the way will be money and sex, materialism and eroticism. They will want to get you to buy, and they will want to stir up the lust in your spirit. And when you turn TV off in the evening, often those two themes have been pounded into you in way more many ways than you realize. So the Christmas season plays very heavily on the money thing. It turns people into consumers, and it commodifies everything. It makes us commodities, because basically it turns us into a thing. It basically says, we don't see you as a human being, we see you as a buying thing, and we need you to buy more. We don't care a whole lot about who you are, we care about what you do with your money. So all Christmas season long and during the rest of the year, all the advertisements are simply about, we want to commodify you because we want to get you to buy commodities. So we treat you as the thing that we want to buy off to get you to do the things we want you to do. $80 billion a year is spent on advertising. $80 billion. That comes down to $350 for every person sitting in the auditorium here this morning. $350 is spent a year to get you to buy stuff for everyone in our country. That represents $250,000 is spent on Mosaic people, if you add us up to about 800. A leading economist said, if there was no advertising, if you just pulled advertising out of the picture, which really has only been around for about 100 years or so, if you pull advertising out of the picture, we would buy 50% less stuff. And really, you think about all the stuff we do buy, if you didn't get to see it on TV or read about it in the newspaper or see it in magazines or on the billboard or hear about it when you're driving down the road with your radio on, you wouldn't be aware of what you could buy. And so 50% less if there was no advertising. Advertising is the way they drive that societal force, that shaping theme into our life. Advertising is the way they form their values in our lives and in our souls. So how would you define the Christmas dream? As we work through the two societal forces and the one we focus on this morning, materialism. Well, the Christmas dream is all about stuff. If you took the spending, the buying, and the giving out of Christmas in terms of things that we purchase at stores, if you took that out of Christmas, well, there'd be little interest in Christmas for it to just be a religious holiday. If it was just about Christ and about coming and worship and singing music, well, we do that at Easter. Christmas is way bigger than Easter in our culture. We decorate for Christmas a month before the stores get going, everything changes, and they drive it as hard as they can. But you go forward to Easter, which primarily stays a religious holiday. And even people in the church tend to forget that Easter is coming till about a week before, and then we go, oh, it's Easter. You see, if you take the stuff out of Christmas, if you take the advertising, all the stuff that surrounds it in the stores, then suddenly the Christmas dream has to be redefined. And so this morning, I want to give to you an invitation to redefine the Christmas dream about around what it was really intended to be. People ask us, as Randy said last week, and I said a few weeks ago, what are you expecting for Christmas? What do you want? What are you hoping for? But often, what are you expecting for Christmas? And most of us would immediately think, something. I'm expecting something, because I let people know what I really wanted. They asked me and I was telling them. Our kids would especially be this way. What are you expecting for Christmas? We might even ask children in the church on Christmas Eve or something. So what are you expecting for Christmas? But Advent, which is what we're in right now, and the lighting of these candles is about Advent. Advent is about the coming of Christ. So when we talk about what are you expecting for Christmas, we're not expecting something, we're expecting someone. So if you're going to redefine the Christmas dream away from what the empire tries to build into us and define it around what it was really meant to be, we turn away from something to someone, and that is the person of Christ. Which leads us to what would be a great Christmas verse this morning. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. 2 Corinthians 9:15. This word, indescribable, is only used once in the Bible. This is the only time it's used. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift, which would mean Paul may have actually coined this phrase himself, because he is taking a word, maybe putting it together and making it himself, pulling some thoughts or some themes together out of the Greek language and building them into one word, because it's the only time this word is used. And maybe he's saying through this word, it is so indescribable that I'll try to find another word to tell you that it is indescribable. And that's where he goes with it. He's really defining the Christmas dream the way it's supposed to be defined. So I want to ask you three questions this morning. If the gift is indescribable, if that's how it's to be redefined, around someone, not something, that captures our attention and keeps us focused at Christmas, then the question I'd like to ask you is this. What makes a gift special? What makes a gift special at Christmas if we're talking about something? And then what would make a gift special if this is an indescribable gift that Jesus Christ brings to us? What would make that gift special? So I'd like to ask you that question, and I'll ask you a couple more. First of all, I just want you to imagine if I received two gifts at Christmas. We just bought a house, and I made friends with a really neat real estate agent. His name's Dan. So if there's two gifts under my tree at Christmas, Dan won't be there because he ain't coming to my Christmas. He's got his own going on. And my son Ryan won't be there because he's over in New York State going to Cornell University and can't get back this Christmas. So he's over there and Dan's somewhere gone and I'm opening up my Christmas gifts and there's two gifts under the tree from two people that I don't have with me there. So I open up my son Ryan's gift first. And I notice the paper he chose. Because this is the first time he'll be sending me a gift through the mail. I noticed the paper he wrapped it in, and I'll notice what he wrote on the tag. Like, I love you, Dad. Merry Christmas. Or, you're a special dad. Or, wish I could be there. Merry Christmas. I will look at the tag before I open it, because his name is on it. It's that special. Then I'll open the gift, and I know that it's going to be something very meaningful to me before I even open it, whether it's expensive or not so expensive. Probably not so expensive. But I'll open it, and I'll just say, this is going to be special no matter what. This is coming from my son, Ryan. I love him so much. After all the other gifts are open, somebody will say, oh, there's one here you forgot. It's from your real estate agent. You know there's gifts like that under the tree, your insurance agent, your real estate agent from the last year, something like that. You go, oh yeah, we better open up that one. You sort of expect a calendar or something of that nature, a box of chocolates to say thanks for doing business with me this last year. We're not sure what it is before we open it, but when we see the name, we know this. It won't compare to the one we just opened, my son's, because the two names are totally different, reflecting two different types of experience around the gift that's been given. So who gives the gift makes it significant in such a unique way. So what if God's name was on a gift under your tree this Christmas? What if it says, I hope you have a most meaningful Christmas. I know this is kind of like just a stretch. I hope you have a most meaningful Christmas. I love you, Jesus. How would you treat that gift under your tree? I would probably be waiting to open that so desperately for the days that led up to Christmas if I saw it under the tree. And I would open it first. And everyone would tell me to open it first. Everything else under the tree from family and friends would be eclipsed. And people would just say, that's from God. Open that gift first. What would you expect when you open a gift from God? Jesus meets a woman on the way to Samaria. She's in a town called Sychar. And when he gets to there, she's by a well, and she's a Samaritan woman, and says Jews don't have dealings with Samaritans, but Jesus certainly does. He talks to her. He asks her all kinds of questions, but she doesn't get who he is. And he asks her to draw some water, and she says, man, I'm surprised that you, a Jew, would ask me to do it, but she does it for him. And then Jesus says this in John 4:10. Jesus answered her, if you knew the gift of God, and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. If you knew who I was, if you knew what name was on the tag, you would have asked me for a gift first and foremost before I ever asked you to draw water from me. You would have been asking me to give you the gift of living water. If you knew the gift of God. And that's where we go sideways at Christmas. Most people don't even have a clue about the gift of God. They're so commodified, they're focusing on things. And God says, if you knew the gift of God, you'd relate to someone this Christmas. So we're into Advent conspiracy in our church, and most of you know about it now. And we're encouraging you to give relational gifts rather than just stuff. We're encouraging you to spend less and find other ways through relationship or through the kind of gift we make for someone, that it basically makes a statement. Well, God, this Christmas, is giving the ultimate Advent conspiracy gift. He's giving us himself, not something. He's giving us someone. And this is the ultimate conspiracy. So let me just state it this way. God is a fetus in the amniotic fluid of Mary's womb. How totally and completely is that conspiracy of the way God decides to come into the picture and bring himself to us. And when Paul begins to think about God becoming a fetus and a baby, he uses a word that he has to coin to say, that is indescribable. The next question I want to ask you is, what makes a gift special? First, whose name? Who gave it? Secondly, what makes a gift special? Was there a sacrifice? Was there a sacrifice? Now, I asked for two confessions this morning. How many of you have ever done the regifting thing? Okay, I want you to raise your hands. I'll absolve you of your guilt because I'm going to raise mine. I just want to know how many of you have taken a gift that was given to you by somebody else and passed it on to somebody else because you didn't open it. Just raise your hands high, okay? Hi, come on, be really honest about this. Wave them around at me. There are a bunch of us that have regifted stuff. And this morning, I absolve you of all your guilt because you experienced guilt because you didn't want to raise your hand and admit that you do the regifting thing. And have any of you experienced what my friend experienced when he opened up his wedding gift, which looked really cool, until he opened up the box and it had been regifted and the person had written a note to the other couple that was supposed to get the gift and tucked it inside the box and he opened it up with his wife and looked at it and says, hi, his name was Mike, hi, to Susan and Tim. We sure hope you have blah, blah, blah. And he realizes he's been regifted. It's a weird thing to look at that person in the face and thank them for the gift. Why is it weird? Because you know they did nothing to make it special. They certainly didn't make any sacrifice to get it. It just passed through their hands as a quick way to say, let's pass that off to someone else. And some of you have already planned to re-gift this Christmas. You've got strategies of stuff that's in your closet from your birthday or maybe a wedding shower or something. You say, this is going to be great to pass off to somebody else. And the reason we feel so guilty this morning is because there's no sacrifice. It's just so cheap to do that to somebody else. The value of a gift goes up when there's something involved in the getting of the gift, in the sacrifice that's made to pay for the gift or make the gift, when the gift involves more time, more energy, more money, and the person receives it knows, oh my, time went into this, or energy and creativity went into this, or money went into this, and a large amount. You shouldn't have done this. That's what we typically say. Some of us this Christmas will receive a handmade gift that took hours to make. And when you open up that gift, whatever it is, some people love to make beautiful quilts, and some people love to work with wood, and other people work with other artistic skills to create something at Christmas that they give to someone. Maybe the person worked a second job during the Christmas season to earn enough money to buy you something they really wanted to buy you. Maybe an engagement ring. And you go, you know, now I know why you picked up that second job. And suddenly the value of the gift goes way up. When we think about Christ and the sacrifice he put into the gift, it is indescribable. And it says in John 15:13, greater love has no person, no man than this, that he lays down his life for his friends. First we find God in Mary's womb, and then we find God on the cross. Two very counterintuitive places for God to be. Talk about Advent conspiracy, from the womb to the cross. And Christ wasn't just executed. We talk about Christ dying for us. Let's all understand something this Christmas. Christ was tortured for us. When a person was nailed to a cross after their back had been lacerated, that was all about torture, as you dragged up and down the back of the cross to try and get air into your lungs until you finally suffocate hanging on a cross. We fail to appreciate the sacrifice of the Christmas gift, of the someone. Have you ever done that? Have you ever unappreciated a gift, underappreciated something that came from somebody? Or have you ever felt that somebody underappreciated what you gave to them? And when they opened it up, you were looking for a certain kind of response, and you didn't get it. It didn't cause a twinkle in their eye. Some of you this Christmas are going to gift to somebody, and you're just hoping for that response that you get from them that says, I know what you just did for me, and I appreciate it so much. And when we're taken for granted, someday we say in our hearts, we say, I hope someday they appreciate what I've done for them. Often parents make the gift of sacrificial serving their kids for 18 years or 20 years. And when they leave, they find themselves saying, I hope someday they appreciate the fact that, and whatever they want to put in the blank. For some parents is, I paid their way through college, or I helped them get that first car. And for others, other parents, I say, we could never do that. But I hope they know how hard we work to provide shelter, food, clothing, and move them through the experiences of life in a way that they could enjoy them. Well, Paul analyzes the gift that God has given, and he simply says, I can't appreciate it the way I should. It's indescribable. I take my level of appreciation up to the highest possible level, and I can't appreciate enough what God has done for us. Was there a sacrifice? The third question I ask is, what makes a gift special? Does it meet a need? Does it meet a need or a desire or a longing? We don't just buy anything for someone this Christmas that's special to us. Over the last weeks, or certainly during the next weeks, we will be listening for something that they might say that gives us a hint or a clue of something they might want. We'll be watching the way their life functions and looking for something that's not quite right in their life and say, oh, they need. I've noticed this about them that they've been wanting or short something that we want to give them. You're going to do some detective work. You're going to work behind the scenes and go up to dad or mom or a brother or sister or somebody else that knows your friend. And you're simply going to say, hey, do you know what they really need for Christmas? You see, you're trying to find something that they really want, something that meets a deep desire or a longing in their life. And when they finally get it at Christmas, you want them to say, how did you know? Hey, how did you know I needed this? Because and when they say that, you go, yeah, I got it right. I gave them something they really want, something they really need. What happens when we receive gifts from people that we don't really need? that we don't really want. They become regifted. They move on, right? And the worst thing could happen is we give something to someone that they don't really need, they don't really want, and then they regift it. If we knew that, we'd go, I bought the wrong thing. This just doesn't work for the one that I love. When you get a gift like that, you pretend it's nice. Oh. And just in your heart, you're saying, I am being such a hypocrite right now. I'm putting on all the stuff to make them think this is really special, but it's not. And sometimes you can't fake people out, and they have a deep sense that, I don't think so. I don't think that was really, that hit the mark. The value of a gift goes up when it meets a need or a desire or a longing. How serious was our need before Christ showed up? Man, the words that are used to describe our human condition are guilt, alienation, death, darkness, despair. You could basically say that we were hopeless and helpless, hopeless without able to do anything about it, hopeless without being able to change it. And into this context, Paul writes in Colossians 1:13, for he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness, despair, guilt, alienation, hopelessness. He has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. So the question would be, does it meet a need? And the answer is, Christ's gift, the indescribable gift, meets a need that far exceeds all the other needs in our life. There is no greater need than our need for Christ to come to planet Earth and rehumanize us, take us away from the dehumanizing influences of our culture, take us away from the eroticism and the sexualization of our culture that just uses people's bodies and just kind of forgets their dignity as individuals. And we look at the pornography industry and we look at what's all being passed off that sexualizes our culture, the people that advertise and throw their bodies out there just to try and get people to do what? The second major issue, to be materialistic, to buy things. And so we use people in two markets. We commodify them in two ways. And Jesus comes into the situation and says, that's dehumanizing. That's hopelessness. That's darkness. When you walk away from that after you've done it, you never feel like you're satisfied. It never does it in your spirit for you. So it says, he came to rescue us from the dominion of darkness. And Paul is at a loss for words again. He says, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. So God's conspiracy is very clear this morning, right? The three questions we've asked of our event, of our speaking experience this morning, the three things that are occurring in this place are the three most important questions that make a gift special. That brings us back to our Advent conspiracy, because God's conspiracy is indescribable. It's through the roof. It brings it back to us. What precedes this text that I've used this morning, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift? What precedes the text? You back up into chapters 8 and 9 of 2 Corinthians, and you'll find something out. The people in Jerusalem were going through a famine. And all the way through these two chapters leading up to 2 Corinthians, and the text we've used today, all the way through, he's talking to them about people are being generous. They're giving a lot away to help people of the famine. And he talks about the church in Philippi and other churches in Asia Minor. And it says they insisted that above, even though they were living in poverty, that they give above and beyond to help the people in Jerusalem. And then he says, so you Corinthian people, go above and beyond. Be sacrificial to help the people in Jerusalem that are starving to death. And everybody's rising up in their own Advent conspiracy to give even out of their own poverty to other people who don't have as much. So as Paul's leading up to, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift, that one verse is just a huge exclamation mark, a verse all by itself, kind of at the end of two chapters that have been talking about us being involved in our conspiracy of giving. So I just want to read to you a little bit from the two chapters that come before. And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. see that you also excel in this grace of giving. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And then it says, this service that you perform for the Jewish people in Jerusalem, for the Gentiles and the Jewish people that are starving to death, this service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of God's people over there, but is also overflowing in many expressions to God. And then after discussing all of this, he says, just so you don't forget, in your generous giving, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Now you noticed in that text that it says these people were giving out of their poverty because they saw the significance of the need was so great. But then he goes on to say, I want you Corinthian people to give, but I don't want you to give out of guilt. Don't feel forced to give. He said, God loves a cheerful giver. So as we go into Advent this year, and as we think about our conspiracy to give not to the people in Jerusalem, but the Clean Water Project, the International Workers Forum in the Balkans, Harvey Scott Elementary School, the Rice and Beans for Haiti, Shepherd's Door for Women and Children's Shelter, the Lighthouse, International Rescue Mission, My Father's House, Inmate Family Care in Warm Springs. Those are all huge things, almost relating as high that the Clean Water Project rates right up there with people starving to death in Jerusalem. But even though the need was so great in Jerusalem, Paul still says, don't do this out of obligation. And if in any way, as we started the Advent conspiracy in our church this year, some of you have felt, I have to do this. No, you don't. You don't need to feel any guilt. Paul was simply trying to help them see, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And from that incredible conspiracy of God coming and the specialness of that great gift, if you feel motivated and want to do something for people who don't have, then jump on board and let's do this together out of hearts that really want to do it. So here we are this morning, God's conspiracy and our conspiracy. The conspiracy started of God coming into the amniotic fluid of Mary's womb, from a womb, an odd place, to a cross, just as odd a place for God to be. And in Luke chapter 1, we have the Annunciation. And this morning, we move to the second candle. This was the prophecy candle from the Old Testament that Christ was coming. And then God announced to Mary that he would be coming, that she as a virgin would bear the Christ child. And she simply is beyond words. How can this be? I'm a virgin. This doesn't fit my paradigm. So I want to invite our musicians to come forward. And let's move to communion. Let's not focus on our Advent conspiracy as a church. Let's focus on God's conspiracy first. As we come to the table today, just come whenever you'd like. But this represents the broken body of Christ and the blood of Christ that was shed for us on the cross. It represents the culminating part of the conspiracy, the death and resurrection of our Lord. And so, if we could just come forward, and when you dip the bread in the cup today, could you just, when you put it in your mouth, could you just say these words, just stop and ponder for just a second. And as you make your way back to your seat, keep pondering as we're singing. Just say these words, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Christmas is about someone, not about something. The empire doesn't get to have its way. God does when we see and we redefine the Christmas dream.
We want to thank you for listening to the weekly podcast of Mosaic Church in Portland, Oregon. We are located at 1832 Northeast 39th Avenue. Our Sunday gatherings are at 9 and 10:45 a.m. and in the evenings at 5:30. Full child care is provided at all three gatherings. To find out more, visit www.mosaicportland.org. Thank you and have a great day.